Good morning. You are tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, the Boulder County Health Department shared its weekly status report on Tuesday on how the coronavirus is affecting us locally. We'll have more coming up after headlines. Then, the coronavirus pandemic has significantly impacted the census, which is taking place this year. It's a once-in-a-decade event. Well, this week was the time that census workers were to be out knocking on doors of households who had yet to complete the census. Well, the pandemic has changed all of that. That means that census workers won't be going out now until August. We'll hear from a member of a local complete count committee who says the pandemic is just highlighting the crucial need to count everyone in our community. Two regular Wednesday morning features, Make Them Hear You and Naturally with Brigitte Mars. Then after headlines from the BBC and a commentary from Jim Hightower, we hear from Noam Chomsky in conversation with David Barsamian on the coronavirus and its response. It's a very special show that's coming up at 8:35 this morning. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. Here's Jamie Sudler.
The U.S. Supreme Court is currently hearing arguments about whether the state of Colorado has the power to punish a so-called faithless elector. The faithless electors were some members of the Electoral College who did not vote for the presidential candidate in the 2016 election who won the most votes in their states. A Colorado elector was removed when he attempted to vote for John Kasich instead of Hillary Clinton in an effort to block Donald Trump from becoming president. The case to be decided by the High Court involves one elector from Colorado and three from Washington state. A federal appeals court ruled that the Colorado elector could cast his vote for whomever he wanted, despite the fact that Clinton won the state's popular vote. Today is the last day of hearings before the Supreme Court. Their decision on the faithless electors case is expected next month. Colorado Governor Jared Polis is in the nation's capital today to meet with President Trump along with the governor of North Dakota. Polis said that it is important for the president to hear what's really happening on the ground, including the fear and the anxiety, the health conditions, and the economic challenges the people of the country face during the coronavirus pandemic. CBS 4 reports that Polis will discuss the federal support the state has been getting and will advocate for more help. The City of Boulder and Xcel Energy have begun discussions about new pathways to reach Boulder's future energy goals as an alternative to a city-run and owned electric utility. In a joint press release issued yesterday, the city and the company said that a potential settlement between them will be conducted through a full public process. The city's work toward municipalization will continue while negotiations go forward. The Daily Camera reports that Mayor Sam Weaver and Mayor Pro Tem Bob Yates were in talks with Xcel as far back as January, and they met again in mid-April. In the joint release, Weaver said that he is cautiously optimistic that negotiations could be successful. The city and Xcel plan to reveal details of any settlement proposals when they are legally permitted to do so. Yesterday, the state lawmakers learned from the legislature's Joint Budget Committee that about 10% of next year's budget will need to be cut as a result of the pandemic. The state will have probably about $3.3 billion less to spend next year. Due to the health crisis, people are shopping and working less, which affects income and sales tax revenues. Democratic leaders are considering major cuts to local school districts and reductions in the state's workforce unless the state receives more federal aid or increases taxes or other fees. The problem is more than just a drop in income and sales taxes. The Colorado Sun reports that lawmakers could be asked to cut residential property taxes close to 20% next year to comply with the Gallagher Amendment to the state constitution. That provision requires that residential tax evaluations cannot exceed 45% of the total of all property evaluations, including oil and gas assets and other commercial properties. Commercial values are expected to drop by more than a third. But it's the pandemic that is creating the biggest impact. General fund revenues, which are made up of individual and corporate income taxes and sales and use taxes, are estimated to be down more than $2 billion in 2020 and 2021 as a result of the coronavirus. Yesterday, the restaurant in Castle Rock that attracted national attention for opening on Sunday in violation of health orders was closed. Both the governor and the Tri-County Health Department ordered the CNC Coffee and Kitchen to shut down. Photos and videos showed the restaurant crowded with people on Mother's Day, with few wearing masks or engaging in social distancing, even though Douglas County is under the state's Safer at Home order that allows only takeout services. The Tri-County Health Department and the State Health Department said that CNC would remain closed until it can prove it is in compliance. The governor said that the closure would be indefinite. In a release from the State Health Department, Jill Hunsaker-Ryan, the agency's head, said that we are still not out of the woods and the virus will continue to take lives if we don't act responsibly. She added that irresponsible behavior like that at the restaurant only serves to defeat all the progress made. As of yesterday's report from the health department, a total of 1,010 people had died in the state. Denver has the most with 214 fatalities. Officials at Rocky Mountain National Park plan to increase recreational access and services beginning May 27th. It's part of a phased reopening since the park was shut down more than 2 months ago in response to COVID-19. The park is working with state officials to follow safer at home guidance. The opening is also being coordinated with the Centers for Disease Control. In today's weather, it will be mostly sunny with a high near 78 and breezy. Tomorrow, partly sunny with a high near 71 and a chance of showers and thunderstorms after noon. Right now, it's about 54 outside. For KGNU, I'm Jamie Sudler.
It is 10 minutes past 8 o'clock. Boulder residents were allowed to adopt safer-at-home measures last Saturday after 6.5 weeks under stay-at-home orders to limit the spread of the novel coronavirus. KGNU's Ros Brown reports that county health officials had mostly positive news for Boulder City Council last night.
Boulder County Director of Public Health, Jeff Syak, told City Council that the growth in daily COVID-19 cases peaked on April 27th and has been dropping since. Syak said as of Tuesday, there were 775 county cases, with 144 people hospitalized, 297 recovered, and 54 deaths.
Again, the thing that I just want to point out here that I know I've talked about quite a bit is just our long-term care facilities are still the majority of the folks who are dying in our facilities. And that is tragic. And we have an entire team, as I had mentioned before, working on that and supporting our facilities to make sure that we're doing everything we can to control the spread of the disease in those facilities.
Syak said the number of positive cases in the coming weeks could increase as the county is able to offer more testing. He emphasized that maintaining a distance of 6 feet from others, avoiding large gatherings, and wearing face coverings is still recommended to avoid infection. He also addressed a situation that gave Colorado a black eye this week in its response to the pandemic. The CNC Breakfast and Korean Kitchen in Castle Rock opened its doors to guests on Mother's Day in violation of the governor's orders. Zayak told City Council it's a kind of nightmare that keeps him up at night.
If you saw the pictures of that, there was a lot of people. Actually, I think that they said that was the largest amount of people they ever had in that restaurant. But those people were very close to each other. They were clearly within 3 feet of each other, and there was no one masking.
Social media video and multiple news stories showed the packed restaurant. Zayak explained why the scenario is so concerning.
That's a challenge to all of us, because if we have somebody who was positive in that restaurant, it's really challenging to then try to figure out who was exposed. How do we actually do that contact tracing that you've heard me talk about? It would take a lot of work and a really lot of time to be able to track all those people down and to figure out who may have symptoms and to make sure they're isolated, quarantined. That is the kind of spread and the kind of scenario we do not want to get into, because it will impact our businesses, our economy, and the people of our communities moving forward if we take those kind of steps. So it's just really important, again, that we want to continue to move forward. We want to continue to move forward for the health of our communities, for the health of the people in our communities, and certainly to keep our economy and our businesses open and moving forward.
The Douglas County restaurant has since had its license revoked. Governor Polis expects to announce on May 25th policies for how restaurants can operate going forward. With that in mind, City Council discussed temporary right-of-way changes that would allow outdoor sit-down dining around town with separation among patrons and maybe even liquor service if the state allows. Parking changes could also be adopted, with some sections of streets or alleys closed to traffic to create more outdoor seating, with the goal of getting restaurants back on their feet. For KGNU, I'm Roz Brown.
You can find all of our coverage of the coronavirus pandemic and all of our coverage of the Boulder City Council meetings, all of Ross's reports. It's online at our news website. That's news.kgnu.org. And you can get there through our main website, kgnu.org. Well, 2020 is a big year for another reason. It's the time of the census. It happens once every 10 years. And because of the pandemic, there's a different timeline right now. This week was to be the week that census workers would be out in the community knocking on doors of households who had not yet completed the census. Well, the pandemic means that now won't be happening until August. Peggy Leach of the League of Women Voters of Boulder County co-chairs one of the Complete Count committees. They're local groups that are dedicated to getting everybody in the community counted in the census. She's the co-chair of the Boulder County nonprofit Complete Count Committee. She says if you don't complete the census by August, you can expect a knock on your door.
Census worker will come and they can help you fill out the form. So a lot of people won't answer the door. They're fearful of that. It's also now with the pandemic, a problem for both the person who would answer the door and for the census worker to possibly be spreading the virus. And so they really, really want people to respond themselves without having to send out the census workers.
And people can, in fact, respond online. And this is the first time that this has actually been available. So given everything that's happened and how everything, all aspects of life have really shifted online, the census was ahead of that. What can people do if they have yet to fill out their census?
So they can go online to, it's census2020.gov. And there's a place for Respond Now. And you don't have to have your code that the Census Department sent. The first question is, what is your code? And then there's a place to say, I don't have a code. So then just hit that. And then you put in your address. And then that becomes the key for the whole thing. So you can do it online. You can also call the Census Department. And they have quite a few languages that they will take. And so a census worker will fill out your questions. They'll basically interview you over the phone and they'll fill in the questions for you if you don't want to do it online. So you can do it by phone. And then, of course, the third way is with a paper form. And so a lot of people should have received those and they can do that. There's still those people in the mountains, though, that have not received that paper form. And they want people actually to wait until they get that paper form. Unless they have a street address. So like an address like 123 Main Street, they can go ahead and go online and enter it that way. But if they have like a rural route address, they don't want you to do that online. They want you to wait for your actual paper form.
Is there a timeline as to when folks in the mountains should be receiving that?
Well, it all depends on when it's safe for the census workers to go out. So they're tentatively looking at early June now. They're going to open up the census office in Longmont whenever that's safe. So that's tentatively early June. And then start sending out census workers to start delivering the packets. And they won't knock on the doors. They'll just leave the packet for the people at these mountain homes and in the mountain communities.
We have talked in the past about why it's important to fill out the census. And you touched on one of the reasons earlier insofar as the allocation of congressional representatives. And there is a possibility that Colorado could have more representation if it shows that we have enough population. Aside from that, why do folks like yourself and many other community groups that have formed to really encourage people to fill out the census, why is it important to fill out the census?
So it's very important because of federal funding that comes, and it's based on census figures. And So all kinds of funding, like education funding, road funding, healthcare, aging services, all those kinds of things. And in addition, a lot of planning happens because of the census. Like they can look at the age groups of people and how they're going to be aging and where do they need to build new hospitals and those types of things. But with the pandemic, it's even more important now. There's going to be a lot of kind of rebuilding of our systems that's going to need to happen. And so the more people that get counted, the more money that we get from the federal government based on population.
Well, that idea that the pandemic has made it even more important that we have accurate information, I think people are more aware of data now more than ever. We're being bombarded every single day with various different data points, infections, hospitalizations, hospital discharges, and of course, tragic numbers of people who are dying. So as you said, it's more important now more than ever because there's going to be so much infrastructure rebuilding in the aftermath of all of this. But it really also shows it really shows the need to have accurate data when we're going through a public health emergency like this. But so many political decisions at a local, at a state, and of course at a federal level are really based on that data as well.
Yes, and that's where, I mean, that's how like FEMA knows where to send resources and how our state government knows where to send resources within our state and all that kind of thing is if they know where the people live and approximately their age groups and their income levels and just all kinds of things that go into these decisions. They just base on so many decisions on the census data.
And of course, right now, when we're trying to work then on projections on the data that we know currently, but also using that to extrapolate where we might be in 2 months and how many ventilators potentially hospitals would need and how many hospital beds we would potentially need, having accurate census data would seem to just reinforce the knowledge, you know, and how that underpins any kind of planning.
Yes, it helps so much in the planning of so many things. I mean, even just think about the 2013 flood and just knowing where the population was and how many resources were needed on roads and that type of thing, you know, let alone with this pandemic and the health issues and all those kinds of things. So yes, it's very important.
Now, this only happens once every 10 years. So if people aren't counted now, we're going to see in 10 years and over the next decade the ripple effects of that when it comes to the potential underfunding of schools or other infrastructure. And this has been an issue in the past, that there have been different communities for a variety of different reasons that have not been represented accurately in the census. What are some of those groups that have not been counted in the past?
Well, so children under 5, rural communities, immigrant communities, people that don't speak English, elderly. Trying to think of the other categories that are.
I know the homeless, because if you don't have a street address, that's a major issue.
Right. Yeah, and that's another thing that's been delayed. Is that was going to happen on April 1st, approximately, and that is still. They still don't know when it's safe to do that.
That's where census workers would go out and actually do a manual count.
To do a count of the homeless, right. You know, another big disruption was the college students. And actually, that's another group that's hard to count. Especially the ones that are off campus. And, you know, this whole pandemic hit right when the census was starting. And a lot of the students scattered and went home, and they were supposed to be counted here in Boulder at CU, either in their dorms or off campus. And from what I understand, they're still supposed to be counted there because that's where they've lived most of the year. That's where they would have lived on April 1st, all that kind of thing. But it's a very difficult message. Because students are getting counted all kinds of different places, and you know, they just assume that they get counted where they're supposed, where they were supposed to be on April 1st, And then the Census Department will go through and eliminate duplicates and try to figure all that out. And that's one of the reasons why a phone number is on the census, one of the census questions, is because if they do end up with two entries for somebody, they can then call them and clarify where they really should have been counted.
That's Peggy Leach, who is a co-chair of the local Complete Count Committee in Boulder County for nonprofits, speaking there about the census and how things have been delayed now because of the current pandemic. Now, you can listen to our in-depth report on the 2020 census. It's part of our Trends series, and you can access all of them at our website, news.kgnu.org. Listen to the Trends podcast or subscribe to the podcast of Trends and listen to all of our in-depth reporting on issues facing Boulder County. And tomorrow morning at 8:30, we're going to have another Trends report, this time taking a look at the coronavirus and how it's disproportionately impacting people of colour and minority communities and what can be done, what needs to be done for that. That's part of our ongoing Trends series, which is a collaboration between KGNU and the Community Foundation of Boulder County. Subscribe to the entire series wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for KGNU. It's time now for Make Them Hear You.
Make them hear you. Make them hear you.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. In critical states like Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Florida, all of which have large, older populations, Mr. Trump's advantage with older voters has been essential to his political success. In 2016, he won voters over the age of 65 by 7 percentage points. But the campaign's internal polls show Trump's support among voters over the age of 65 softening as he pushes to reopen the country's economy at the expense of stopping a virus that puts older people at greatest risk. A recent poll shows Trump's coronavirus approval rating was lower with seniors than with any other group except young voters. Joe Biden holds a 10-point lead over Trump among voters 65 and older. Now, 4 years ago at this time, Hillary Clinton trailed Trump by 5 points among seniors. A recent Morning Consult poll showed that 46% of voters say they trust Biden with Medicare and Social Security versus 41% for Trump. The demographic shift is fairly new, and officials said they attribute it at least in part to Mr. Trump's shocking coronavirus briefings. They're also unhappy with Trump's opposition to vote by mail, which is very popular among older voters, and they're upset to see Trump fighting to utterly destroy Obamacare with no replacement plan. Trump also wants to roll back infection control requirements in U.S. nursing homes, even as the long-term care industry's residents and workers are overwhelmed by the coronavirus, and 16,000 nursing home residents and workers have died so far of COVID-19. Trump wants to reduce the need for assessments from once a year to every other year and to disregard a requirement that caps residents at 2 per room, a breathtaking proposal in the face of the deaths taking place at senior care centers. But worst of all is the way Trump has threatened to block desperately needed COVID-19 relief legislation if Congress does not slash the payroll tax, which funds Social Security and Medicare. Choking off Social Security's funding stream is an existential threat to seniors' earned benefits. This payroll tax cut would provide zero direct relief to more than 30 million Americans who have lost their jobs over the past 6 weeks. The president suggested at a press briefing last month that the tax cut should be permanent. Another idea making the rounds of the anti-Social Security caucus is to pay for the coronavirus stimulus aid for the neediest Americans by forcing them to borrow from future Social Security benefits to keep themselves fed and housed today. This, of course, keeps future stimulus assistance from burdening the wealthiest taxpayers. If you have thoughts on Trump's plans to undercut Social Security by cuts in the payroll tax and making people borrow from the Social Security accounts, you can contact your senators and representative. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
And it's time now for Naturally.
Greetings, welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars with some ideas on things that you might want to grow in your garden. And that is culinary herbs. My friend Raw Chef Giuliano says one can never grow too much basil or cilantro. Basil thrives easily here in Colorado. You can grow it in pots on the windowsill in the winter. It's a member of the mint family, and it's considered pungent, warm, and dry. The Latin name is Osmum basilicum. So basil is a wonderful herb to use in salad. You can even make pesto out of it. It helps to improve digestion and circulation. It's especially good for the lungs, spleen, stomach, and large intestines. And you can eat it fresh, but you could even make it into a tea and use it to treat coughs, colds, headaches, and nausea. Another herb that is wonderful to grow is cilantro. And the way you grow cilantro is with coriander seeds. So you get two herbs in one. You plant the coriander seeds, you get leaves. The leaves are cilantro. You let the leaves turn into flowers. Well, actually, they produce flowers. The leaves don't turn into flowers. But then after the flowers are spent, they will develop their ovaries, which are coriander seeds. Latin name of coriander, Coriandrum sativum. And sativa means with a long history of cultivation. Coriander is sometimes known as Chinese parsley, and it is in the same family as parsley. So it's a relative of dill and anise and fennel. And it's widely used around the world because coriander and cilantro are used not only in Asian cuisine, but in South American cuisine. It's sometimes called Mexican parsley, but also in many countries around the world, Vietnam, a lot of Philippine islands, they use lots of cilantro. So coriander is more pungent and warm in temperature, whereas cilantro is considered more cooling. Both coriander and cilantro are digestive aids. They help to treat bloating, gas, cramping, indigestion. They help to freshen your breath. Maybe when you've left an Indian restaurant, you've eaten a few little seeds, which might have included coriander and fennel seed. We know that coriander has antimicrobial properties, and you could make a tea from it. And just smelling essential oil of coriander is said to improve a bad mood. These are easy to grow, and I hope you have fun with it. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.